Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. We are all called to fulfill God's purpose in one way or another. Our mission as Christians is to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. Some people demonstrate the courage, the energy, and the faith to serve in such a manner as to make an impact on the injustices that society imposes on certain groups within our society. My guest today, Lori Lutz, is one such individual. Author of 12 books, Lori has a wealth of experience around the world. She and her husband Alan spent more than 20 years in South Africa, where they worked with young people suffering under apartheid. Upon returning to the USA, Lori earned her master's degree in communications journalism at Wheaton College Graduate School in Illinois. In 1977, the Lutzes began working with Partners International, where Lori served as director of publications and edited the Mission magazine. She wrote 4 books for Partners during the 13 years she worked there. In 1991, Lori was invited to establish a track for women as part of the International AD 2000 movement. In this capacity, she mobilized and trained women leaders around the world to become involved in prayer and evangelism and to develop and use their gifts among unreached people, groups who had no Bible, church, or anyone to bring the Christian story to them. Lori's books include Women as Risk Takers for God and Looking Forward to the Rest of Your Life's Embracing Midlife and Beyond, both published by Baker, which encourages women to revive their dreams and take advantage of what could be the best years of their lives. Her novel, The Soweto Legacy, about living under apartheid in South Africa, is now available on Amazon eBooks. Lori wrote a basic manual on the biblical role of women in ministry called Lessons in Leadership, and she taught the first training program based on the manual to students in Delhi, India in 2008. Lori's inspirational historical fiction, Daughters of Deliverance, which came out in 2016, and The Queen's Daughters, 2017, about the life of Dr. Catherine Bushnell, were published by Lighthouse Publishing of the Carolinas. Lutzes have five children, one of whom is with the Lord now, 18 great-grandchildren, 22 great-grandkids. Her beloved husband, Alan, died in 2008. Welcome to the show, Lori.
Well, thank you.
Lori, it's such a pleasure to have
that
you
was
here. Quite the introduction. Well, I just wanted to make people aware of who you are. You are a very impressive lady, that's for sure. I hope I've done half of what you've done by the time I get my next
Well, I've had
few
many years.
Years
to do that.
Yes, yes. Do you mind me sharing?
My 90th. No, go ahead.
Yep, I was just going to say, audience, Lori has celebrated her 90th birthday, and she is still going strong, so I am very impressed. Well, Lori, can you tell us, at what point in your life did you realize that writing was important to you? Were you one of those kids in school that just couldn't wait to write an essay, or did writing become an interest for you later on in life?
Oh, I don't think I thought of writing as anything I would do to make money or to have a job or anything. But I think our years in Africa, I had to do a lot of writing as a missionary. In a faith mission, you have people that support you. You have churches that support you. And so I had to write a lot of reports, a lot of letters. And it seemed like I often had good response to what I wrote, which made me begin to think, well, maybe I could write. And by that time, I was already mother and had 5 children at home. So I didn't do much writing then, but it got better as I went on to do my master's program, where I was really encouraged to write.
So it sounds like you did very well at articulating yourself when the need arose, and then that interest just kind of grew out of that. Yeah,
right.
So give us a little bit of a overview then, Lori, of your writing journey. Did you start out, I believe we said in your bio that you started out writing for a magazine, and then you kind of moved into some nonfiction books?
Right. I did that. You know, that magazine period, and when I think back to it now, it was a big part of my what I did every day. for a number of years, and I had we had the magazine, like the old Eternity magazine, and the youth magazine that went out with along with I've forgotten what their major publication was, but there were different publications out in those days, and I just wrote magazines and magazine articles. I would send them out, they'd come back with a rejection. I'd send them out to somebody else, they'd come back with a rejection. Finally, I sold them, and that was very good training because I could find what they really wanted, what they liked.
So what I was going to say in response to that, Lori, is that you obviously were persistent and you were willing to accept the suggestions that editors made for your work, which is a big part of becoming a successful writer.
I didn't enjoy the rejections and then the back and forth all the time, but then I started writing books, and of course, when you get a rejection on a book, that means what you've been doing for the last year or two is being rejected. So it was a little harder than the short articles I did. But my first
for
book
sure.
was, I'm trying to think of what was the Soweto Legacy. I think the two came out pretty much the same. In the beginning, it was When God Says Go that I wrote for Partners International about an African-American lady who was the daughter of slaves who went to Liberia and worked there until she was almost 95. And I loved writing her story because she had so many interesting things that happened to her. And she was not prepared for it. Everything she did was sort of an experiment. And sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't. But I really enjoyed writing that book. And that book has now been redone, well, just re-edited with a new name called When God Says Go. And it's available on Amazon as well.
So that was a true story based on a person's real life thing you did through interviews and so such.
Yes.
Was
well,
it?
Time I met her, she was 99 years old. So I did interview her, but actually someone else had interviewed her for a few years back. And they had all these tapes, and I could listen to all these tapes. And then I went to Liberia. And in Liberia, I interviewed people who knew her, and they speak kind of a pidgin English in Liberia.
Yes.
It was hard to understand, but I figured it out. And when the stories began to be the same ones, everybody I went to, I kept getting the same stories, and I knew I'd probably covered all the bases, and I came home and started writing.
Oh, man, that sounds absolutely fascinating. But that's what I meant, that it was actually it was based on a real person. It wasn't like a novel that you made up
right.
a character and everything.
No.
Wow.
No, no,
oh, that
no.
sounds
she was
awesome.
A real
I'll
person.
I'll have to look into that one, Lori. That sounds quite fascinating. So this is probably a silly question to ask someone like you, but do you believe that there is a time when you are too old to write?
Well, I think if you're having a problem remembering things and not being clear in your relationships with people, sometimes that's hard for the person it's happening to recognize.
Mm-hmm.
But there might be a time like that. But right now, I don't feel I'm too old to write. I feel that if I write again, I want to be sure that it has an audience, because the publishing system has changed a lot. A lot of the bookstores have closed. In fact, most of the Christian bookstores are closing. So
I know, and that's
all
sad.
My sales. It is. But so all my sales are on social media. And then the publisher doesn't do that. They don't work on that. They give you ideas, but you have to do it. So in other words, after you've done writing a book and then you finally found a publisher, then you still have to find ways to work through social media. And that's where I feel I might be too old, because younger people know social media so much better automatically. They don't have to try to figure out what everything is. That's where I think I might be getting too old to write.
Well, you wrote several nonfiction books, and then you moved into fiction. Well, actually, I didn't realize it's the Soweto Legacy, was it? Was a novel.
Soweto. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Soweto, I'm sorry. But even then, your most recent novels, Daughters of Deliverance and The Queen's Daughters, tell us a little bit about what they are about and how you came about to write them.
All right. I had a friend who had finished her doctorate in England and was very interested in women who were involved in the women's movement, and especially from a Christian perspective. And I was with her at a conference years ago, and she said, Lori, somebody's got to write Catherine Bushell's story. She's a wonderful pioneer in trying to rescue women out of the lives that they went on during the Middle Ages, during the Victorian era. And so she tried to get me to write, and I wasn't interested. And finally, I read up something about her life, and I realized Catherine Bushnell is just a very unique woman and a leader at a time when women did not go out and speak. They didn't speak against injustices. They certainly didn't talk about prostitution or trafficking, as we call it today. It was then called white slavery. I mean, those were things that women did not do. And yet the Women's Christian Temperance Union, you may remember that great women's movement that went on in the early part of the 20th century. They were led by Frances Willard, and Frances Willard and Catherine Bushnell Catherine was a doctor, and they got together, and Frances asked her to start the social media, the social part of the Women's Temperance Union, and it was all to find these women that were in trouble. And that's how she started. She started down here in Denver on Hamilton Street, where she went to talk to prostitutes and try to rescue them, and they did rescue a few. But her main thing was to make the legislators, the people who could make the changes in these laws, she would go to them and write reports. And she took great risks herself, going into the dens where these girls were locked up, at getting their stories and then telling their stories. And I just was so impressed with her life. And so it was just a great joy to write her story, not only in America, but also she was called then to come to England by Josephine Butler, who was another pioneer for women's rights there in England. And Josephine sent her and her friend to India, where the military, the British military, was still buying and selling Indian girls and locking them up in the cantonments, so that all the soldiers had a woman they could go to whenever they wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like
a godly woman.
It sounds like she was quite a fascinating lady. Of course, I'm going to refer for our listeners to the fact that you were recently a guest on my website, on my Over 50 Writer blog, and you talked about those books, and I thought, wow, it's so amazing to hear about a person who was willing to take on such a difficult task like that of trying to rescue these women and like you say, trying to make legislators aware, because from my understanding, most of them are just going to turn their back and deny that such a thing is even happening.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's what she fought in the Wisconsin, when she went up to Wisconsin lumber camp. The governor of Wisconsin was very against her doing it. He didn't want to expose the fact that they had this terrible blight on the lumber camps. They all had these places where girls were kept for the men. So he didn't want her to do that, and there was a lot of effort against that.
Sure. And then not only that, but of course, your politicians are always looking at election day, and they don't want to rock the boat in any way. Yeah, especially with people that are powerful. Men that are powerful, they don't want to. Yeah.
No, and there was very little help in those days. Whereas I'm so glad today that there are many organizations that are working with trafficked girls, with exposing them, with changing laws. It's a lot different now, but in Catherine's day, she was like about the only woman that ever did that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely, and now there's a whole movement along that line. In fact, a friend and I just happened to be talking this morning about how I believe it's the Miss America contest has totally eliminated the swimsuit contest,
right.
And I guess ladies that have been involved in that contest in the past say, oh man, what a relief it is, because they have to do such stringent things to their bodies to even be able to compete in those contests, and it shouldn't be that way at all.
No, but
the emphasis
women at the head of,
on the physical and all, and it really shouldn't be.
There are women now for the first time heading up the Miss America contest, and so they're responding to how women and girls have felt exposing their bodies like that. just be the guest the best one. I think it was a shame, and I'm glad that they have changed their policies.
So am I. Yeah, I'm 100% in agreement with you with that. Well, Lori, human trafficking, of course, is an issue in your books, and I guess I'm going to ask, how do you think things have changed? Because your books are set back in the 1880s, and we like to think that we as a society evolve for the better to some degree. But sadly, what do you think about today in comparison to back then? Do you think things are better? Do you think they're worse as far as the human trafficking issue?
I think the numbers are a lot worse because you've got actually like mafia that are running these trafficking things. And I've read someplace, I can't tell you where, that trafficking today brings in more money than the drug trade.
Oh,
and
I'm
these
sure.
girls are sold, that like a piece of flesh. Individual girls are often sold to very, like in the Middle East, they're sold to these Middle Eastern men. So the numbers are very bad, but I had to do a lot of reading. I did a lot of research for Catherine's books. And even the books that she wrote, they're not interesting reading in that she wasn't a good writer. She just sort of wrote the facts down.
Yeah.
But the things that she saw going on in China, in Hong Kong, and Macau, and then in actually the place that I didn't even write much about was San Francisco, and the number of Chinese girls that were kept in brothels in San Francisco, and the tricks those men did there, they would go over to Hong Kong, and they would pretend that they were a businessman, and they wanted to get married to a Chinese girl, so the family was so happy, they'd give this Chinese girl, they'd have a big wedding, give her a lot of gifts and dollars because they couldn't take things back over on the water. When he got halfway across the ocean, he would tell her, well, I'm not married to you really, I'm just going to sell you to the brothel. And when they got to the border, they got to San Francisco, there were men waiting there to pay $2,000, $3,000 for this girl. That was going on in our own
goodness.
Country, and not much was being done against it. So
it was
just as terrible in those days, but probably the numbers were not as great.
Yeah, it's a very, very sad thing, that's for sure.
But I want to tell your listeners that if they read my book is not a salacious book. I don't go into the scene in the bedroom with the men. I try to keep it at a place where even Catherine didn't want to get involved in that. She was a godly woman. She prayed about everything she did and asked God's guidance. And she and a friend did this praying together and asking for direction. And so the book is not salacious. It's going to make you feel you're reading something dirty. Because
it's
more about, as she talks to these girls, how to get her out of that situation, and how and encouraging her to pray, and she always prayed for the girls. So my 16-year-old granddaughter read Daughters of Deliverance last year and wrote a review. She was so impressed by it. And then now when I went back and visited her, her 10-year-old sister got the book Daughters of Deliverance that her mother had, and she held it in front of her. And her mother took a picture because she is so anxious to read it. So it's the kind of thing, I wouldn't say most 10-year-olds could do this, but it's the kind of thing that young women could read and understand and still not have their minds soiled and dirtied by the fact.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it's not gratuitous. There's not gratuitous graphic scenes in there.
No.
I'm sure. Yeah, very good. Lori, we're about halfway through our show, and at this time I kind of take a little break just to make listeners aware of who and what they're listening to, because we have listeners that do come into the show midway. So listeners who are listening this morning to Step Into the Light, I am your host, Patty Sheen. Today I am so pleased and excited and honored to have guest Lori Lutz. Lori is what is 90? Nanogenarian? Anyway, she just celebrated her 90th birthday. I know 80 is octo. I'm not sure what 90 is. But anyway, Lori just celebrated her 90th birthday. She is an avid writer. She's written quite a bit of nonfiction. And we're currently talking about two books that she wrote that are fiction that are based on human trafficking issues way back in the 1880s. It's based on the life and the story of Catherine Bushnell. Lori also served as a missionary over in Africa for 20 years with her husband. So she has a whole raft of experience to bring to the table in the writing world. She has written quite a few nonfiction books that mainly relate to women and empowering of women and spreading the gospel. And she's just an amazing lady. So it's just a pleasure to have her with us today. I do want you to know that if you missed any part of the show, or if you'd like to listen to it again, or you would like to refer listeners to it, that we are on archive, and you can find all of the shows that we have broadcast at my website, which is pattysheene.com, that's spelled P-A-T-T-I-S-H-E-N-E, all one word, .com. There you will see the Blog Talk Radio tab right at the top of the site, and you click on that, and you will get a link to find links to all the shows. And also, Lori has a website. She also has a Twitter account. And when you do click on my site and you get to her show, there's a little tab that says more information. And there you will find a link to Lori's website and to her Twitter account. So, in fact, I may even go ahead and put up a couple of links, Lori, to your books. I'm sure they're on Amazon, so we'll get that done as well. So that folks will have easy access to them. Yeah. So anyway, I invite you to check out Lori's website and to connect with her on Twitter and to check out pattysheene.com and listen to this show and any other shows that may catch your interest. So let's get back to Lori here. Lori, as you know, the premise of this show is for folks to share when they have been through a dark time in their life and how they found their way back to light, or to share ways in which they help others find their way back to light. And I know that you have experienced a little bit of both. Obviously, you have helped people over the years to find the light and the love of Jesus Christ and the gospel. But also, have you ever experienced a dark time in your life when things were just really tough and you had to struggle to get your way back to the light?
You know, I think every life is full of those, and they come at different times.
Yes.
I think the hardest, of course, is when you lose family. And our son was a missionary in Turkey. They grew up in South Africa, but none of my five children felt they should go back to South Africa, because I think they felt there was a strong enough white church and also black church there to continue the work. But two of my children went to Turkey, and my son, who had been there probably 10 years and knew the language, I was so amazed. He knew the language like a Turk, because I would visit over there, and I could just listen to him talking with people on the street or friends, and he was just very fluent.
Wow.
He came down with multiple myeloma. And
that
was a shock when I got the phone call from him saying, actually Bonnie called, and she said, "Mom, Randy has cancer." And they sent him home because it was. And he was home, and we had him here for 6 weeks. He actually spent most of his time in Phoenix in the hospital there, and stayed with his brother. But we had him at our house in Colorado for 6 weeks. And what a precious time to have him. We kept hoping that he was going to be victorious, but to see his life, how he's grown in the Lord, how he's grown in his zeal to serve God. And it was just a joy, a gift from God, to give that boy to us at 42 years of age for those 6 weeks. And when I said goodbye to him at the airport, I really did have that struggle in my heart. Am I going to see him again? Well, I did, because he spent another 6 weeks in intensive care in the hospital in Phoenix and died there. And that was a dark time. That was a very dark time.
Oh, absolutely.
But it was also a time I knew he was with the Lord. I didn't understand why the Lord would take somebody who was so keen to serve among the in the Muslim world and knew the language so fluently. It did not make sense to me. But, you know, that's what makes the times dark, is when the things that God allows in your life don't make sense. and yet you cling to him because, you know, he knows the sense behind it. And I found that verse in Isaiah 57, I believe, 1. And I'm just going to open it up while I'm talking here.
Okay.
It comforted me because, as I said, I just could not understand why God would take a man with such gift and such a passion for serving him and then just take him out of the prime of life. And then I read, here's Isaiah 5. Does good people pass away? The godly often die before their time, but no one seems to care or wonder why, or in brackets, understand. Oh, the next verse part says, no one seems to understand that God is protecting them from the evil to come, for those who follow godly paths will rest in peace when they die. And oftentimes I went to that verse and I realized, I don't know what God has protected him from. What could have happened in his life that would have been stopped his ministry or destroyed his faith or whatever. But God knew. God understands why he took them. And I just cling to that verse.
Yeah, you never know, Lori. I mean, he may have ended up being, you know, God forbid, one of these people that ended up being in a hostage situation and martyred, you know. I mean,
right.
You just never know.
No, yeah. No. Right now, one of Randy and Bonnie's friends in Izmir has been arrested by Erdogan, the president of Turkey, and they've accused him of being a spy and just involved with all the evil organizations that are trying to destroy the government. He's been in jail for 2 years. His trial has come up twice, and now it will come up again in July 18th. And if he's found guilty, he will be given a 35-year prison sentence. And he's 50 years old, so it's like a death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So we're praying for Andrew, and I would encourage people who listen to pray for, yes, many people involved in that hostage situation.
Yes,
in these
absolutely.
And pray for their faith, that they will stay strong.
Yeah, we have no idea over here in this country what that's even like.
No. No, we don't.
I mean,
so,
you know,
I know where Randy is, and that's the bright side of that dark period of my life.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us, Lori. I know that's got to have been very difficult for you to relive that experience for us here on the show today, and I certainly appreciate you sharing that with the listeners out there. And I know you also, you and I can kind of identify with this. We have both lost our spouses. You lost yours in 2008, and the second anniversary of my husband's passing is coming up next week. That's another really tough one, especially I'm sure you and your husband were probably married for a long, long time.
Almost 60 years. We would have, he died in October, and in April we would have celebrated our 60th. Yeah, it was a, but you know, I'm so glad I live in a place where people are all old and there are many, many losses.
Yeah.
And it's such a joy to be able to, that I understand what they're going through. And when I lost my husband, there were many comforting people around who knew because they had gone through it. So I'm thankful for that. And I want to be that kind of a person as well. I try to understand their pain and comfort them.
Absolutely. Yeah, you try to be that support for them when they need it. Yes. And sometimes maybe God puts us in that position for a reason because he knows that those people need someone to be there for them. So,
right.
But yeah,
right.
I just wanted to bring that up that I noticed. And it hasn't, you know, 2008 isn't all that long ago, really. It's less than 10 years.
No.
About 10 years.
That's right.
And
it'll be 10 years in October.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I still talk to his picture sometimes when something really goes well. You know, there's his picture on the piano, and I talk to him. You know, I think I know that a lot of people do that. There's a sense that person is never really gone because he's been such a vital part of your life. And
exactly.
So, and he was a lovely, wonderful prayer warrior, and I've sort of taken his mantle on a little bit. I can't be the prayer warrior he was, but I feel like I'm spending more time in prayer these days than I did before he died.
Than you did before. Yep.
Yeah.
I know I know if I do something, it's totally stupid. I'll just kind of smile and say, I know
exactly what
you would be saying.
You're right. We understand each other, Patty.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You got that right, Lori. Well, so I know you have a very fascinating history in Africa. And like I mentioned earlier in the show, you were a guest on my Over 50 Writer blog. And you shared a photo on there of yourself and a dear friend in the Baby Elephant Nursery, which is located outside of Kenya. Tell us a little bit about that experience. What was so special about
it's
it? Tell us a little
Nairobi.
Bit about. Yeah, and I'm. I know
well, that
Nairobi.
Was very.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, that was very, very special because it came out of the blue that some old friends that Al and I knew back in 1955-56 in South Africa. And we had followed their work over the years. And I got this request from him and his wife that she was having some problems with memory. And she had been asked to write the story of how the university, Daystar University in Nairobi, which was started by Don and Faye, how that was started, how God led them to that point.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, it was hard to say. I didn't want to say no because it sounded so wonderful, and I was afraid I was just saying yes because I wanted to go back to Africa. This would be Kenya. But I told all my children about it. I said, now, what do you think? And my oldest son wrote back, and he said, Mom, if you say no, you're going to have to write and tell me why. And that's where they just encouraged me to go. So here I was trooping off, 89 years old, to spend 2 months in Africa. And went over via Turkey, spent a week in Turkey with my kids there, and then went on to Nairobi, arrived there at 2:30 in the morning. Felt so bad
grief.
For Don Smith having to come and meet me there. But I spent the most wonderful 2 months there, living at the Smith's home, which is sort of a center for the students to come and talk. And Don and Faye are older, but they still love the African students. And in that environment, I just was able to go back through all their materials. They had plenty of materials to organize a book and to actually write the first draft of a 212-page book, which Don is working on now to finish. But actually, the whole structure of the book was done. And it was such a joy. And never one day did I regret being there or feel homesick. I just thought, oh, God, you blessed me so to be here. It was such a gift. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful for it. Yes, I'm so thankful for that gift.
I can tell just in your voice, Lori, that you're absolutely enthused, and that sounds like an amazing experience.
Yeah. And that baby elephant nursery, I went off to Nairobi to spend a couple of days with Judy, a friend that I had worked with the 82,000 Women's Movement. And I stayed in her home, and then she took me to the baby elephants where people go out in the wilds with helicopters, and they, I don't know, did I get to tell you about the way the baby elephants, the bottle is held by the keeper. It's a great big bottle, but they wrap their trunks around that bottle and hold it.
Oh,
it was so cute.
For heaven's sake. Oh. I'll bet you it's fun to see animals like that. I can remember back in the day when I'd enjoy going to the zoo for crying out loud and, you know, see the smaller animals, and they're just so fun to watch.
Yeah, that was just a little treat while I was there, but it was also nice.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Well, you and Alan worked in Africa with young people during the period of apartheid. Lori, what similarities do you see in the struggles that African-American young people face in America today? Or were there similarities?
I think there were similarities because both here in America and in Africa, a white government was keeping them enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
The African-Americans here were enslaved, and we fought a terrible war to free those slaves, but then there still had to be the social adjustments. And that's what South Africa is going through. Apartheid was another way of enslaving them. They just said, you can have just so much education, you can't live in any white areas, you can't have certain jobs, you have to live in a certain area with the rest of the Africans. A lot of restrictions. Apartheid was a very terrible thing. The white people did that to them. Fortunately, they were able to get the break from apartheid without a bloody civil war. I mean, our civil war was a terrible, terrible thing, and it left
yes.
both sides with a lot of healing that has to be done. Now in South Africa, it happened very quickly, and I believe God did that. There were so many people praying for the freedom and the stop of apartheid that it ended up that the white leader of South Africa and Nelson Mandela, who was in prison, and most of us didn't even know who he was because the white government mm-hmm. kept it so secret. You should
yeah.
see me with my hands. I'm ejaculating everything here. But those two leaders got together, and the white leader freed Nelson Mandela and set up an election. And I believe that was all of God. So the freedom came more quickly to South Africa, but now I was back there 4 years ago, and they still, even though they're free, they have a lot of things they have to relearn and attitudes on both sides that have to be changed. And so there's just as much racial issue there as there is here. Only it's a little different way, but the racial problem is there. Right now, I have to tell you, though, that Cyril Ramaphosa, who is now the current president of South Africa, was a young person in our Youth Alive program in Soweto. I did not know him at the time.
Oh, man.
It was after we left. But I do remember that Al and I went over one time after we had left permanently, and we visited, and the young man that we had trained and was leading Youth Alive, he brought Cyril Ramaphosa, who was at that time the chairman of the board of Youth Alive. And they had lunch with us in a restaurant, and that was such a new thing for us to be able to eat with Africans in a restaurant. So I pray for him because he's got a lot of issues to deal with in that country. It's a long way from being resolved.
Mhm, mhm. Wow, how fascinating, though, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to
I'm
have
just
the
hoping
experience.
He does the right thing.
Yeah, and you know, you probably influenced him in some positive way that you may never see, Lori. It's
well,
hard to say.
That's true because the young man that was his best friend that took over Youth Alive, he became a believer through my husband's working patiently with him and helping him to get over his anger about white because a white man had hit him with a truck and he lost his leg. And of course that caused him to be very, very, very bitter against the white. But
sure.
I believe through Al's love for him and his kindness and leading him to the place where it ended up that he got a master's degree from Wheaton College and returned back to South Africa just at the time that we were leaving. So he took over at that time. Oh, I could tell you so many stories. I've got to quit telling stories here.
I love it when my guests tell their stories.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah, and when you're as old as I am, you have a lot of them. You just are somebody who, like, pinches me with a little pinch, and then that starts the whole thing going.
Lori, tell us about the 82,000 movement. I'm not familiar with it. And what were some ways that you, talking about stories, what were some ways that you saw God at work in your efforts to spread the gospel?
Did you ever hear of the 1040 window?
No.
No. Well, there were hundreds of thousands, I imagine several millions of people in America through their particular church denomination or their affiliation with missions or something, knew about the 82,000. It was a sort of the vision of Louise Bush, who was the director of it, and his wife came up with the idea, the 1040 window, which means 10 degrees, I don't know if it was north and south. One is latitude and one is longitude.
Oh, okay.
And if
you
block that area off, it basically covers the Hindus in India, the Muslims in all the Muslim area, and the communist area in China. It covers that area. And many, many, many millions of those people have never heard the gospel. There's no missionary. There's no Christian radio. There's no Christian literature. There's no church. They're in total spiritual darkness. And so the goal of 82,000 was to plant a church in every unreached people and to tell the gospel to every person in the unreached areas. Now, it was a goal way, way, way beyond what we could ever have done. But it started a path where today there's a lot of work, a lot more work than there used to be in the Muslim area, in the Chinese area, in the Hindu area. There are a lot more, not only missionaries, but literature that's gone out, training nationals to do the work, Bible correspondence courses. I am so thrilled for Sat7, which is a global radio station that beams Christian programs into the Muslim world in the Arabic language, in the Turkish language, in the whatever other languages. There are many, many. And, you know, the government has a hard time turning off those radio stations because they're coming out from a space, outer space, into their country.
Yes.
That's the kind of thing that God used to promote the idea of reaching the unreached. And so they felt they had to have somebody to cover the women, because they had pastors and they had university professors and writers and all this, a lot of men. But the women's track, somehow Louise Bush asked me to head that up. I felt totally unprepared. The only thing is, I knew a lot of women in the third world because I had been traveling with my husband to these countries when we were working out of California with Partners International. And that's how I just picked the women I knew. And I had 12 women in 12 parts of the world with whom I worked with to have training sessions, literature, all kinds of programs to start them being aware of the unreached people right across the road, right up the over the next mountain. So that was 10 years of wonderful work. It didn't reach the goal, but it sure started something.
Surely got things started. And when you look back, Lori, don't you feel like maybe in your connections with those women that God was laying the groundwork for something that you didn't even see coming down the road?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And it's still going on, and not in a great organization, but it became Women of Global Action, and I knew the leader of that, worked very closely with them for the next 10 years, and now it's called Terza International. And they are still reaching women in the... So it's going on. It's going on. And I just have to thank God for the privilege I had. The privilege it was to work with those women and see what they could do with the little that they had. And they had to struggle to get the free... Not so much the freedom, but, you know, the church doesn't like women to take any top leadership positions very often.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a struggle, mainly in the developing world, that I could see them struggle. But God is blessing their work.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I love to hear stories like that. It just makes you feel so uplifted and like there is a lot of hope out there, you know, because you hear so much negative. So it's just wonderful to hear what you have to offer today, Lori. We have a few minutes left in the show. Is there anything you would like to discuss that I didn't particularly mention, or you thought, oh, man, I wish I had time to tell that story, and now you do?
Oh, my, you kind of put me on the... well, there's a
put
little
you on the
story
spot,
that has nothing to do with my working overseas, but I had 4 boys and 1 girl. And... I think it's hard, and especially when they were very close together. They were, the oldest was 7 and a half when I had the 5th child.
Oh, my.
And it was not the way we planned. But, you know, that alone was God's teaching. And I always tell Rodney, who was my 5th one, I said, Rodney, you should have been a very warped person with all kinds of problems because I did not want you. Because I was so close. I mean, I had barely had Nathan in school, and here was number 5 coming along. And of course, my supporters at home, I actually had one supporter write me a letter and ask me if I knew where they came from. I mean, that was difficult. You come home with 5 kids and you're raising money in the church. But anyway, so they were close together. And so I don't think the boys, I've seen families where the boys were 3 or 4 boys, and then maybe 4 or 5 years later, a girl comes along, and she's the queen of the castle. But
of
that's
course.
Not true when she's in the middle and the boys are right next to her and there's competition. And so, you know, I think she didn't really blossom when she was growing up with these boys. I think maybe until the time she started thinking about boys are wonderful, and then she was glad because all her brother's friends would come over to the house. And
oh, sure.
Very common in South Africa, somebody comes to visit, you make tea. So she would, the minute the guys would all enter the house, she'd serve tea. And on Saturday mornings, her household chore was to bake, so she always baked enough cookies. Well, that, anyway, so she went off to college, and she didn't really know what she wanted to do. She didn't know where her gifts were at all. And one night she called me up from Trinity, and she said, oh, Mom, and she was kind of sad. She said, oh, Mom, I think I know what God wants me to do. He wants me to work with children.
Okay.
And that is what she, because she realized her gifts were in the area of working with children. And she has become the most wonderful children's worker. She's worked in some very large churches, and now she's working in a relatively small church. But she loves the children. She's so proud of them when they perform. Or like a couple weeks ago, they had a baptism, and five of her kids were baptized in a great big tub out on the lawn that was filled with very cold water. But she was standing there on the. She couldn't do anything herself because she had just had been in an accident and broken some ribs, and so she could not interact physically to baptize them. But she stood there. She was just so proud of them, and then handing them their birth certificates. And that's just something that's been in my mind as I see her. I mean, she's a very mature woman now, but to see her joy in the ministry that God has called her, and that she realized way back in college, really with some disappointment that her gift was to work with children.
I've had enough to do with kids. Give me something else. Well, that's neat.
And now she's expecting her first grandchild. And grandchild will be born right here, here in Holland's Ranch where we're living. So she's going to get to see that grandbaby every week. And I'm so pleased for her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you know, I mentioned earlier that I have the one grandchild. But, oh, my goodness, Lori, I have been so blessed with the fact that she lives right here in my town.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So
I
live in a very, very small town. And granted, I don't get to see her as often as I'd like because she's so doggone busy. You know, she's already a sophomore in high school, and she carries excellent grades. And my goodness, next year she's taking two science courses as well as two college-level courses as a junior in high school.
Right,
and
that's what they do. That's what they do these days. And it's just going to get worse, Patty, I hate to tell you.
I know, and she's very active in sports. She's on a traveling softball team, which means that she practices in the next town, which is 20 miles away from here. And she plays Clear in Pueblo, which is 80 miles away from here. So she's just always on the go. But, what a delight it is to just spend a little bit of time with her. You know, I'm just so blessed to not have to travel 4 hours across country to see her, you know. So,
fly across the ocean. I had six grandchildren in Turkey growing up there. But we'd fly over, I guess, every other year we got to go, and it was so wonderful. But I think we also developed very close relationships with them because we would stay with them for a week or 10 days.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they've been waiting for Grandma and Grandpa to come, and we'd come with gifts. Mm-hmm. And Grandpa would have all the time he needed to spend with them, riding horse on the floor or whatever they did.
Yeah,
so it was really special. And those six grandchildren have really been close to us, where I've had some others that haven't seen us very much who don't feel as close. So you're blessed to have, if you have one, she's right there.
Mm-hmm. No, I know a little bit of what you experienced because my son lives over in the UK.
Oh.
You know, he doesn't have any kids at this point, but still he and his wife are, you know, they're a fair distance away, and I haven't been over there to see them. They've been back here a couple of times, but it's a whole different thing. Thank goodness for today's technology, you know, where we can hop on Skype and and see each other.
It doesn't
or we do the chat thing, you know, over email and stuff. But still, it's not the same as having them right here in town.
No, it isn't.
Yep. Well, Lori, I think we're about at the end of our time. I want to thank you ever so much for spending this time with us today. It's been such a delight to learn about all of your adventures and all of the ways that you have touched the lives of others with God's word. And you're just an amazing lady. I can't emphasize that enough. And it's just a blessing to have gotten to know you. And I want to thank you for that. And I want to thank you for sharing with our audience today.
Can I thank you for doing what you're doing? Because I think a lot of people think, oh, they have to be young to write. But frankly, I feel that the older we get, the more experiences we have with God, the more rich our writing can be. And so I think it's wonderful that you are doing that, that you're encouraging older women to write and then giving them some visibility.
Because thank you.
When I wrote the book about aging, I want to say that the very first book I wrote, the very first book of research that I picked up, the first sentence was, to be a senior in America is to be invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And that was quite a strike. And so you're making older women visible using their gifts, and I think that's a wonderful thing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, once again, Lori, I guess we better say goodbye. I could talk to you all day, but again, may God bless you in your work, and may he keep you strong and healthy. I have a feeling that he still has a lot of work for you to do and that you will rise to that challenge.
I trust so, or else you'll take me home, one of the two.
There you go. There you go.
Thanks again, Patty.
So, thank you. God bless you. Listeners, in closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. Please don't forget to go to Lori's website and to go to my website, which is Patty Sheehan, PattySheehan.com, where you will find a link to Lori's website underneath her radio show, which is right below the Blog Talk Radio tab where all the shows are located. I hope that wasn't too confusing when I said that. It's relatively easy to navigate, though. So may God bless you throughout this week. And it was a pleasure to have you with us.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites.